Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, kind of a momentous week in media culture, at least. You may have noticed over the last few years, I know I sure did, the tendency, habit, conspiracy, whatever it was, to for media operations as they opened new channels, moved to streaming, moved wherever they had to move, to rename themselves or their offshoots, whatever they were called. Plus, it was, CNN Plus. There was, I think, ESPN Plus for a little while. Apple Plus. Well, this week, Apple TV. That was what had the plus. Apple TV Plus has rebranded itself. It's now Apple TV. So I'm just glad I didn't, you know, I was about to get on the bandwagon and rename this program Le Show Plus, but thank goodness I didn't. Now, ladies and gentlemen, just an indication that even the worst news sometimes can have less than hideous consequences. You know that the head of the White House Office of Management and Budget, Russ Vought, I think it's pronounced Vought. He's the guy who wrote Project 2025, or at least most of it. You know, that thing that Donald Trump never read until he got into office, and then magically he'd read all of it, or at least heard about it. They have been canceling monies for certain agencies, certain projects, which the felon-in-chief described with utter grace as Democrat projects. But among them were more than $12 billion in projects in for Democratic-governed cities, projects to be undertaken by the Army Corps of Engineers. Given their performance, which you've heard about on this program, both before and after the flood of 2005 in New Orleans, and if you ever read a book called Paving Paradise about how they went about enforcing the no net loss of wetlands rule in Florida over three decades, you might think canceling money for projects for the Army Corps of Engineers just might not be a bad idea. Let them not try. Hello, welcome to the show.
Pumping wine, I'm stupidly happy.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this very edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, the media all over the place, business media, other media, have been sort of ablaze this week with the discovery that the world of AI may be a bubble.
Echoes of warnings ringing down the hall. Seeing signals flashing red across the sky. Do we dare to question or just amplify? Anything but delicious. It might be bubblicious.
Yes, it's an AI-created jingle about this very phenomenon. From the BBC, which had an interview with Sam Altman, head of OpenAI, quote, quoting Altman, I know it's tempting to write the bubble story. In fact, there are many parts of AI that I think are kind of bubbly right now. Unquote. BBC continues the debate over whether AI companies are overvalued has taken on new urgency. Skeptics are privately and now some publicly asking whether the rapid rise in the value of AI tech companies may be at least in part the result of what they call financial engineering. In other words, their fears these companies are overvalued. In recent days, warnings of an AI bubble have come from the Bank of England, the International Monetary Fund, and JP Morgan boss Jamie Dimon, who said to the BBC, the level of uncertainty should be higher in most people's minds. At a panel discussion in Silicon Valley this week, an early AI entrepreneur, Jerry Kaplan, told a packed audience, he's lived through four bubbles. He's especially concerned now, given the magnitude of money on the table as compared to the dot-com boom. There's so much more to lose. Quote, when the bubble breaks, it's going to be really bad, and not just for people in AI. It's going to drag down the rest of the economy. Unquote. Him. AI-related enterprises have accounted for 80% of the gains in the American stock market this year. Gartner estimates global spending on AI will reach $1.5 trillion before this year ends. OpenAI is at the center of the tangled web of deals drawing scrutiny. Last month, it entered into a $100 billion deal with chipmaker NVIDIA, the most valuable publicly traded company in the world right now. It expands an existing investment NVIDIA already had in Altman's company, with expectations that OpenAI will build data centers powered with NVIDIA's chips. Then OpenAI announced this week plans to purchase billions of dollars worth of equipment for developing AI from NVIDIA's rival. Then there's Microsoft, heavily invested in OpenAI, and NVIDIA has a stake in OpenAI and in another startup, CoreWeave. As these increasingly complex financing arrangements get more and more common, experts in Silicon Valley say they may be clouding perceptions of AI demand. Some people, quote the BBC, aren't mincing their words about it, calling the deals, quote, circular financing, where a company invests in or tends to its own customers so they can continue making purchases. Kaplan says there's some telltale signs the AI sector and therefore the wider economy could be in trouble. In frothy times, he says, companies announce major initiatives and product plans they don't yet have the capital for. And retail investors, meanwhile, clamor to get in on the action. He says, quote, we're creating a new man-made ecological disaster, enormous data centers in remote places like deserts that will be rusting away and leaching bad things into the environment with no one left to hold accountable because the builders and investors will be long gone, unquote. From New Scientist, banks and investors have spent hundreds of billion dollars in the AI arms race to fund R&D and create the energy infrastructure needed to operate data centers. But like the railroad and dot-com booms before it, this frenzied investment has caused an AI bubble to form, and it could soon go bust. An implosion of this kind could send shockwaves through the economy. And Scott Galloway, who's a professor of economics and a commentator, said, a few weeks ago, we warned the AI economy, propped up by a web of circular financing deals, might be headed for a collapse. Since then, the deals have continued, says the AI founder, or one of them, Brett Taylor. I think we're in a bubble, said the CEO of Databricks. It's peak AI bubble. Most of the market's strength and the economy's resilience now seems to rely on that bubble. AI companies, as I say, have accounted for 80% of the gains in U.S. economy over the last year. Technology and software investment, AI, was responsible for 92% of GDP growth in the first half of this year.
Help! Help! Turn off the bubble machine! Help!
Meanwhile, OpenAI's new text-to-video and audio AI generator app, Sora 2, has melted down, according to Futurism.com, into a pile of potentially copyright-infringing AI slop. That's the new word for stuff on AI that's either hallucinated or just wrong. The app's feed of AI-generated content has been filled very quickly with videos of Nickelodeon SpongeBob SquarePants or entire episodes of South Park with kind of sexy stuff. Physicist Stephen Hawking being brutalized. The app's prominent use and recognizable intellectual property and the likenesses of real people combined with its sheer amount of hype, says Futurism.com, has allowed it to shoot up the top of Apple's App Store. But that creates a problem for OpenAI. How to stop Sora 2 from burning through cash? Users generate countless resource-intensive AI videos. Altman, head of OpenAI, admitted the company has a lot of work to do when it comes to turning its AI generator into a moneymaker. Quote, we're going to have to somehow make money for video generation. People are generating much more than we expected per user, and a lot of videos are being generated for very small audiences, unquote. I know the feeling. The sheer amount of computing power needed to generate AI videos makes the issue serious for the company. Last month, researchers from the open source AI platform Hugging Face found that the energy demands of text-to-video generators quadruples when the length of videos doubles, suggesting the power required increases quadratically and not linearly. Those aren't my words. You know that. The vast majority of people who are using Sora 2 to create funny videos, the vast majority do not pay for the service. It's not clear, says Futurism, that users ever will. And adding to OpenAI's woes, rights holders could soon be asking questions about its eyebrow-raising, asking-for-forgiveness-later approach to intellectual property. Company has implemented guardrails that were mysteriously absent on day one. As a copyright lawyer pointed out, users are running into the company's content blocks now at full force. And copyright owner lawsuits might be in the offing or off the inning. Meanwhile, the Register reports Carnegie Mellon University researchers have developed a benchmark to evaluate how AI agents perform when given common knowledge work tasks like browsing the web, writing code, running applications, and communicating with coworkers. It's a simulation environment designed to mimic a small software firm and its business operations. They did so to help clarify the debate between AI believers, who argued the majority of human labor can be automated, and AI skeptics, hello, who see such claims as a part of a hype thing. In a paper detailing their project, says the need for a benchmark, suggesting AI agents have a way to go before they're truly useful. Using two tests, the Carnegie Mellon researchers put the following models through their paces and evaluated them based on their success rates. Sample, Gemini, 30% success rate. Claude, 26%. GPT, 8%. That's GPT-4. Llama, 7.4%. Quote, we find in experiments that the best performing model, Gemini 2.5 Pro, was able to automatically or autonomously perform 30% of the provided tests to completion, achieved a score of 39% on a metric that provides extra credit for partially completed tasks, according to the authors of the paper. OpenAI is losing about three times more money than it's earning, says the Register, British Tech Journal. 95% of those using ChatGPT, which generates roughly 70% of the company's revenue, aren't paying a dime to help stem the losses. Even so, the company is valued at about $500 billion, as it commits to spending more than $1 trillion that it doesn't have in partnership deals over the next 5 years. That same company tested its newest chatbot, GPT-5, on its own in-house benchmark called Simple QA. A test is a collection of fact-seeking questions with short answers that measures model accuracy for attempted answers. GPT-5 didn't have access to the internet, so this was testing what it, quote, knew, unquote. In this test, the hallucination rates are higher. GPT-5 main, 47% hallucination. GPT-5 thinking, 40% hallucination. GPT-4.0, 52% wrong. From NewsGuard, generative AI tools fail at a nearly doubled rate when it comes to one of the most basic tasks, distinguishing facts from falsehoods. The 10 leading AI tools repeated fake information on topics in the news more than one-third of the time in August of this year, up from 18% a year ago. When it comes to providing reliable information about current affairs, the industry's promises of safe, reliable systems have not translated into real-world progress. As chatbots adopted real-time web searches, they moved away from declining to answer questions. Their non-response rates fell from 31% last year to zero this year. But at 35%, their likelihood of repeating false information almost doubled. How to make money from all this? Try sex. ChatGPT will have kinkier conversations after Sam Altman announced the artificial intelligence company will soon allow its chatbot to engage in erotica for verified adults. Companies that were early to embrace mature AI, according to the Associated Press, encountered legal and societal minefields and harmful abuse. A growing number of people have turned to the technology for companionship or titillation, says Altman. Now, after planning to get rid of the safeguards he's had, his company is not the elected moral police of the world, not even the ICE. There are 29 million active users of AI chatbots designed specifically for romantic or sexual bonding, not counting people who use conventional chatbots in that way, according to research published by Zillan Keon at Oxford. Doesn't include users of Character.ai, which is fighting a lawsuit that alleges a chatbot modeled after a character in Game of Thrones formed a sexually abusive relationship with a 14-year-old boy and pushed him to kill himself. OpenAI is facing a lawsuit from the family of a 16-year-old ChatGPT user who died by suicide in April. If you live in any one of 13 states, you might have a higher electric bill next year, says Business Insider. Consumers of the biggest regional power grid operator in the U.S. could see their bills go up, largely due to skyrocketing demand for electricity coming from AI data centers. And going back to the top of this segment, Financial Times says the growing reliance on debt, particularly from lower quality issuers, now also leaves banks and the highly leveraged non-bank financial sector exposed to defaults, incestuous bilateral funding deals. We called it earlier in this circular funding. Only amplify the risk of domino effects. And they don't mean fats. Is AI a bubble?
Is AI a bubble that would be trouble? Messier than stubble. Anything but delicious. It might be bubblicious.
Now news of that smart world we live in. Audio equipment manufacturer Bose is discontinuing cloud support for its product line called Sound Touch, effectively reducing the premium devices to basic speakers with limited functionality, according to the British tech journal at Register. The company is pulling cloud support for all Sound Touch products from next February. After that date, streaming services, your Spotify, your TuneIn, along with multi-room playback, will cease functioning.
Good night.
Connection to sources via Bluetooth and other uses on standalone speakers might continue to work, although Bose said it couldn't guarantee performance long term, you know, like later. SoundTouch app itself going to be discontinued. The decision disappointing to customers is not surprising. Bose began phasing out the technology several years ago, joining numerous hardware manufacturers that have abandoned cloud services and left once smart devices with diminished capabilities. Wasn't that supposed to be the future? Bose justifies the move by pointing to the product line's age. Sound Touch systems were introduced way back in 2013. Things have since moved on. Quote, we're no longer able to sustain the development and support of the cloud infrastructure that powers this older generation of products, said Bose. Negative reaction from users has been noticeable. One called the situation exploitative BS, and they didn't use the initials. The lesson from Bose is that cloud support for products is not forever. Well, not even for more than 13 years, apparently. It's something to consider before dropping hundreds of thousands on smart home gadgets, only for one or more suppliers to decide the world has moved on. Or maybe they just picked the wrong cloud.
You pick me up.
seem to be no catch. I don't think she'll drive me to the wall.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. You know who Tom Homan is? If you've seen him on television, you might be scared. Well, he's just a grim-looking man, I would say. He was the acting head of ICE during the first term of the felon-in-chief. And coming into the election last year, he touted his connection with Trump, claimed he would play a role in the next administration, the one we've got now, or that's got us. Quote, "I promised President Trump when he announced that if he goes back, I go back," he said on X, "and I'm going to run the biggest deportation operation this country's ever seen," unquote. He's now the border czar. Yeah, we've got a czar. According to Reuters, the FBI began investigating Homan last August. The New York Times reported a subject of a different FBI investigation brought up Homan, I don't mean raised him, claiming a payment to him might lead to, quote, "lucrative federal contracts for border security work," unquote. MSNBC reported that FBI agents posed as contractors, and they met with a business associate who connected them to Homan, and Homan himself indicated he would be willing to secure government contracts in exchange for money. Last September, according to all of those news outlets, agents used a hidden camera to record Homan taking $50,000 in cash that was reportedly placed in a bag from the food chain Cava. The investigation, according to MSNBC, took no further investigative steps by the FBI in the final months of last year, just monitoring him to see whether he would attempt to make good on the promise if Trump was elected. The Justice Department's Public Integrity Section agreed to investigate last November under the Biden administration. Authorities shelved the investigation this year earlier. MSNBC and the New York Times reported Emil Bove, a former personal lawyer to Trump, who was serving as acting deputy attorney general, told Justice Department officials he did not approve of the investigation as early as February of this year. Bove is now a judge, so he's safe. And the question is, did Tom Homan except $50,000 in a bag in return for his promise to dole out contracts when he got into office. So far, with investigations being closed and different reports in the news media, one is left to wonder. Until now.
Time now for a visit to Public Radio's Theater of Insufficient Documentation. Alternative Scenario Playhouse. Dramatizations of two different interpretations of a possibly ambiguous event. Scenario 1.
Tonight on Bag Drop, TV's Rich Armitage pays a surprise visit to America's border czar, Tom Homan.
We're the Bag Drop Copter, and tonight we're going to make a special delivery here in Washington, D.C. You know, flying over our nation's capital is not exactly a walk in the park. You have to get clearances and approvals from half of the federal government. But as regular viewers know, nothing's too complicated for Bag Drop. After all, last season we dropped a big bag of cash at Sly Stallone's house. And no one has better security or more of it. So tonight, as usual in our final segment, we've got our biggest bag of cash, $50,000. And we're surprising the U.S. border czar, Tom Homan, with the drop. Frankly, I can't wait to see the expression on his face. But we won't have to wait much longer. Here we go. Okay, we're right over his office. Oh, Tom Homan, you're getting a bag drop.
Yes? Thanks, Rich. I'm pushing the drop button right now.
And he's opened his door and... Oh, Bess, just look at his expression.
Rich, it's what we call
the bag drop stare. And after the break, we'll land and talk to the lucky bag droppee.
And now, scenario two.
So, Mr. Homan, if you joined the new administration...
Oh, I'm joining, all right. You could put money on it.
That's what I was hoping you'd say. Here. Sorry, it's not all paper money, but the bank ran out.
No problem. Give me a call anytime.
You know I will.
Next time, two more versions of a possible news event on Alternative Scenario Playhouse.
Now, the apologies of the week. You may know the story of a group chat among some young Republicans. The chat was littered or filled with racist and sexist comments. Vermont Senator Sam Douglas broke his silence this week on that racist group chat controversy. He apologized for his involvement, but stopped short of committing to resign, despite mounting pressure from fellow Republicans. Politico reported on the controversy Tuesday involving the Orleans County senator. This is in Vermont, not in New Orleans, taking part in the group chat with other young Republicans on the messaging app Telegraph. Not the one Pete Hegseth used to expose confidential information. No, this is another one. According to Politico, Douglas allegedly made a comment about an Indian woman not bathing. He said it was not a generalization and doesn't represent his views or character. In a separate conversation, his wife, a Vermont Young Republicans National Committee member, is alleged to have made a comment about Jewish people being dishonest. In a statement later, Senator Douglas said, quote, "I apologize so deeply to my constituents and colleagues that our county and state have been dragged into this. I'm currently weighing all my options to ensure that the outcome of this is what's best for the safety and well-being of my family and my constituency. And I will make another statement before the end of the week." Maybe he did. The governor urges him to resign. And on a related subject, J.D. Vance offered a non-apology. He suggested that the participants in the leaked chats were much younger than, in fact, they were. Some of the participants were barely younger than the 41-year-old vice president. Quote, "The reality is that kids do stupid things, especially young boys," Vance said. "They tell edgy, offensive jokes. That's what kids do. And I don't really want us to grow up in a country where a kid telling a stupid joke, telling a very offensive stupid joke, is caused to ruin their lives," unquote. Mother Jones reports the public records indicate that 8 of the 11 Republican operatives who took part in the chat range in age from 24 to 35. The Lutheran Church of Norway this week apologized to the country's LGBTQ plus community. They still have the plus. They're not like TV networks. At a gay pub in Oslo for the discrimination and harassment it subjected them to in the past. That's where the apology took place. Quote, "The Church of Norway inflicted shame, serious harm, and pain on gay people," said the presiding bishop in a speech at the London Pub, a prominent venue for the gay community. Quote, "It should never have happened. And to them I say today, I'm sorry." He acknowledged the discrimination, unequal treatment, and harassment caused some to lose their faith.
Oh, no.
In the 1950s, the church said gay people were a, quote, "global social danger," and qualified their acts as, quote, "perverse and despicable." Those were the 50s. Chick-fil-A has issued an apology after a black policeman was forced to pay for a meal while his white colleagues were given their food for free. Tracy Reed, a sergeant in the Clover Police Department in South Carolina, said he felt humiliated during the incident, which he feels was racially motivated. Reed said the incident occurred in a Georgia branch of the fast food chain a few weeks ago. He was standing with his colleagues while they were in line for their order, and they were clearly in the same uniform when they were given their food for free. However, Reed was told he had to pay. Quote, "I was kind of humiliated and embarrassed, you know, with the whole situation. It seemed like it was a racial issue to me." The Chick-fil-A August, Georgia owner-operator described the incident as an oversight. Quote, "We regret the unintentional impact this incident had and sincerely apologize to our guest. We were deeply concerned by the claim. It appears to have been an honest oversight across separate lines and registers. We're strongly committed to supporting our community's first responders." Reed, the police officer in question, said he had written a letter to the brand's corporate office demanding they retrain its employees at the location in Augusta, Georgia. Said the company needed to strengthen its nationwide policies to comply with civil rights laws. Oh, those! In response, he was given 2 free meal cards and an apology from Chick-fil-A. Speaking of politics, appearing at a public forum for the first time since a pair of viral videos rocked her campaign for governor in California, former U.S. Representative Katie Porter expressed regret and vowed to prove to California voters that she has the temperament for the state's job at the top. Porter apologized for threatening to walk out of a recent interview with CBS News Sacramento and for cursing at a staff member in a video unearthed by Politico last week. But she attempted to regain her footing atop the race, promising her contrition would not come at the expense of her combative political style. "I want people to know that I understand that what I did was not good," Porter said. "I'm not going to mince words about it, but I also want people to understand that I am in this fight because I'm championing them." The conversation with a CBS reporter bristled did Porter at a series of questions before attempting to remove her mic and end the interview. Porter later said, "I don't want this all on camera." On Friday, Porter said she could have handled that interview better. "I think part of my job is to be honest with voters about that," she said. And she also addressed the leaked video in which she yelled at a staff member to get out of my effing shot during a virtual meeting. "I apologized in real time when that happened because it was inappropriate right then and there, and I knew it. I could have done better in that situation. I knew that. I really want my staff to understand that I value them," unquote. Katie Porter. The University of Tokyo has issued a formal apology for collecting and storing the remains of Ainu and other indigenous peoples from around the world for research purposes without the consent of those communities. According to the university, its researchers have been collecting remains from burial sites in Hokkaido, Japan, as well as Australia, Hawaii, and other regions since the late 19th century, when remains were good. Quote, the university regards these historical facts with the utmost gravity, reflects on them with sincere remorse, and hereby expresses our heartfelt apologies, said a statement from the university. It marks the university's first official apology following a verbal expression of regret delivered a couple of months ago by a university staff member to a Hokkaido-based ANU organization of representatives and academics. With the apology came the handover of remains that was organized as part of a broader repatriation effort for modern-day Japan's indigenous group, who hail from Hokkaido. University has established a task force to investigate the current status of other remains held on campus, other remains, and work toward returning them. Dateline Rockford, Connecticut, a Rockford firefighter has deleted a Facebook post calling the fire department's new chief a, quote, DEI face, unquote. He also posted an apology for his remarks. Rockford Fire Department Chief Rebecca Tayo, an openly gay 16-year veteran, was chosen by the Board of Police Commissioners after a national search for a new leader. Selected from among a field of five qualified finalists, Jason Morse, who's responsible for the social media post, is a 48-year-old vice president of the International Association of Firefighters Local, representing the local Rockford Fire Department. Horrible. Can't wait to leave. This guy has proven again it's not about the men and women that respond to your emergencies every day. It's about a DEI face to show up when they're told with a smile and be a puppet for City Hall, he wrote in the since-deleted Facebook post. Commissioners said T.O. excelled during the hiring process. After the post was shared and received significant backlash, Morse apologized in the comments and changed his Facebook cover photo. Quote, I'll address it. I apologize for my comments. They were deleted. I won't make excuses. I try and raise my son to respect everyone and treat them with kindness. I need to teach by example as well. And Maine oyster farmer Graham Plattner is running for the Senate on the Democratic ticket. His campaign is in crisis after reports of offensive online messages by him over many years. Those reports surfaced. He had won the adulation of Bernie Sanders and other Democratic senators, raised more than $3 million in the first 6 weeks of his campaign. The 41-year-old military veteran who served in Iraq and Afghanistan made crude comments about black diners, rural white people, police officers, and sexual assault victims in years-old comments on Reddit. Well, years old. CNN reported that around 2021, he called all cops bastards and described himself on Reddit as a communist. In 2013, he posted, quote, why don't black people tip? And in 2018, he wrote, if people expect to fight fascism without a good semi-automatic rifle, they ought to do some reading of history, unquote. In the aftermath, his political director resigned. In a five-minute video Friday on X, Plattner painted his past posts as the product of a young man who had returned home from his service overseas, deeply disturbed. Quote, I had PTSD, I had depression, I had all the things that come with serving in a war and two wars that I eventually began to not believe in at all. It left me feeling very unmoored. It left me feeling very disillusioned, very alienated, and very isolated. And I think, like a lot of people, I went on the internet to post stupid things, unquote. That was the purpose they announced for the internet way at the beginning, wasn't it? AOL, I think. Plattner said things changed 3 or 4 years ago after he moved to his hometown, met his wife, and began to feel connected. Quote, for those of you who've read these things and been offended, have read these things and seen someone that you don't recognize, I am deeply sorry. And finally, Mark Benioff. He's the head of Salesforce. He apologized this week for saying President Trump should send the National Guard to San Francisco. This came after a week of being hammered by the city's leaders and even some of his fellow tech titans for the remarks. Quote, I do not believe the National Guard is needed to address safety in San Francisco, said Benioff, the founder of Salesforce and chief executive of it. He added he made the remarks out of caution as his annual Dreamforce conference ramped up in the city and brought an extra 50,000 people to downtown. Quote, I sincerely apologize for the concern it caused. It's my firm belief that our city makes the most progress when we all work together in a spirit of partnership. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, news of the warm. Won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Heat-trapping carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere jumped by the highest amount on record last year. Hey, we set a record. Soaring to a level not seen in human civilization. The hell is that? And turbocharging the Earth's climate and causing more extreme weather. That's according to the United Nations Weather Agency this week, the World Meteorological Organization. In its latest bulletin on greenhouse gases, it said CO2 growth rates have now tripled since the 1960s and reached levels that existed more than 800,000 years ago. That was before hippies. Emissions from burning coal, oil, and gas alongside more wildfires have helped fan a vicious climate cycle. People and industries continue to spew heat-trapping gases while the planet's oceans and forests lose their ability to absorb them, said the report. The Geneva-based agency, Geneva, said the increase in the global average concentration of carbon dioxide from 2023 to 2024 amounted to the highest annual level of any one-year span since measurements began in 1957. Growth rates of CO2 have accelerated from an annual average increase of 2.4 parts per million in the decade from 2011 to 2020 to 3.5. The heat trapped by CO2 and other greenhouse gases is turbocharging our climate and leading to more extreme weather. Reducing emissions is therefore essential, said World Meteorological Organization Deputy Secretary General. And you know, the President of the United States isn't listening. You just know that. Surging temperatures worldwide have pushed coral reef ecosystems into a state of widespread decline. This is according to Nature magazine. This marks the first time that the planet has reached a climate tipping point. That's according to researchers who just announced that. They also say that without rapid action to curb greenhouse gas emissions, you know that hoax, other systems on Earth will also soon reach planetary tipping points. Those are thresholds for profound changes that cannot be rolled back. Quote, we can no longer talk about tipping points as a future risk, says Steve Smith, a social scientist at the University of Exeter and a lead author on a report released recently about how close Earth is to reaching roughly 20 planetary tipping points. This, he says, is our new reality. You know, reality is overrated anyway. News of the warm.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
I guess there's never enough said, really. In a stark reminder that microplastic pollution comes in many forms, research from Plymouth Marine Laboratory and the University of Exeter has revealed that tiny particles that are shed from car tires are sticking to and also being eaten by key species in estuaries. This is from Oceanographic magazine. Formed through the constant abrasion of car tires on roads, these minuscule pollutants are a complex mix of synthetic and natural rubber, laced with a cocktail of industrial chemicals, trace metals, and volatile organics and antioxidants. Almost good enough to drive on. While designed to increase car tire durability and road performance, increasingly car tires are being recognized for their insidious environmental footprint. New study published this week focused on corophium volulator. You know those small shrimp-like crustaceans. They play a vital role in estuary food webs. Researchers exposed these animals to environmentally relevant concentrations of tire particles. The findings were unsettling, especially to the animals. Sticking power, the particles adhered readily to the crustaceans' bodies, particularly their antenna and feeding limbs, raising concerns about long-term interference with feeding and mobility. Whether filtering from the water or scavenging on the sediment, the animals ingested tire particles both ways. Most alarming, however, was the size of the particles consumed. The majority measured under 64 microns, roughly the width of a human hair, raising concerns around an even deeper biological intrusion. Such small particles may be capable of moving beyond the gut wall, one of my favorite walls, entering tissues or causing internal blockages that impair feeding. Aside from that, and hiking shoes and outdoor gear are probably a significant source of microplastic pollution in the wilderness. This is from new research checking for the pernicious material in several Adirondack mountain lakes in upstate New York. Researchers measured microplastic levels in two lakes that are among the highest sources of water for the Hudson River, one that sees heavy foot traffic from hikers, another that's far away from a path, rarely touched by human activity. The samples from the lake that sees heavier foot traffic showed levels that were about 23 times higher. Soft-soled trails, shoes, and synthetic clothing appear to be significant contributors to microplastics finding their way into these remote, otherwise pristine waters, said a data scientist who independently worked on the project. Just one word. I forget what it is, though.
Thank you.
ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. I'll see you about 3 a.m., okay? A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans, to the Hawaii desk, too. The email address for this program, your chance. I don't think we've got Cause I Talk t-shirts anymore. I don't even remember where I put them. And I didn't. The playlist of the music heard here on also, and a lot of stuff to read and enjoy and watch and listen to, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the Crescent City.